Chapter 5. Monlo Harbour, 3 days later.
"Why is the city screaming?" asked Namatjira.
No one had an answer for him, nor had they an answer to his next question, which was,
"Why is this offensive turning into a total farce? Anybody? Anybody?"
They shifted uncomfortably, the high officers of the Imperial Army regiments at the Monlo front. Namatjira had summoned them to attend him in the largest meeting hall of the Terracotta Palace, and they were wary of his displeasure. Lord Commander Namatjira had a famously choleric temper. He also had one of the finest martial records of any army commander in the Great Crusade. 103 successful campaigns of compliance, the last 24 of which had been achieved as commander of the 670th Expedition Fleet. Nuth was to have been the expedition's 25th, making it officially 670-25, or the 25th world brought to terms by the 670th Fleet. That achievement now looked to be in serious jeopardy. Namatjira was a tall, dismayingly handsome man, with heroic features like the noblest classical statue, and skin so black it possessed a smoky sheen. He wore a frock coat of chrome plate armour over a deep-water blue uniform, and black riding boots with ornate chrome spurs. A floor-length cloak of painted silk hung off one of his shoulders, and a soldier standing to his left carried his fur shako with the reverence ordinarily accorded to a holy relic. The soldier was a veteran of the feared Lucifer Blacks, so called because of their coal-dust velvet coats and jet body plate. The Lucifers, an Ischian-raised elite brigade as old and celebrated as the Byzant Janizars or the Sidhu Bharat, were all but extinct. Most of their strength had been depleted in the last years of the Unification Wars, and, lacking the structural resilience of the Geno Chilead, they had never rebuilt. During the Crusade, they had served a ceremonial role, providing companion retinues for distinguished commanders like Namatjira. 5 other Lucifers stood behind the Lord Commander, their hands on the pommels of their sabres. One carried a standard, from which dangled the many laurels and sun disks, all stamped out of sheet gold, that enumerated Namatjira's triumphs. Another held the golden lead of the Lord Commander's pet thylacine, a regal, lithe beast with a dappled and striped mahogany pelt.
"Anybody?" Namatjira asked.
There were almost 100 high officers and uxors in the chamber, the senior unit commanders of the serried forces deployed at Monlo, some 750,000 men. The 24 uxors represented the Geno 5-2 and stood solemnly amongst the various dress-uniformed officers of the Zanzibari Horde, the Crescent Sind 6th Torrent, the Regnault Thorns, the Outremars, and a clutch of support and auxiliary detachments. No one seemed especially willing to risk framing a response. Towards the rear of the gathering, Honan Mu watched the Lord Commander carefully. She had only arrived in Monlo the day before, bringing with her the Geno forces freed up by the conclusion of the Tel Yutan offensive. She'd arrived in time to see the dispiriting disaster Monlo was turning into, and was therefore thankful that Namatjira could not direct his wrath at her. What was happening at Monlo had not occurred on her watch. She pitied Nitin Dev, a major general in the Zanzibari Horde, and a damn fine warrior in Mu's experience. Dev held overall field command of the Monlo Theatre. Namatjira looked directly at Dev.
"Major General," he asked, "anything to say?"
There was a pause. Lord Commander Teng Namatjira seldom toured a fighting zone in person, except to join the victory celebrations at the end of a compliance war. He preferred to orchestrate his campaigns from orbit. For him to make the drop to the surface, to risk exposure by visiting the sharp end of things, was a very big, very telling detail.
"No, my lord," said Dev, "I haven't."
"Really?"
Yes, my lord. I cannot add anything to what you already know.
Honan Mu narrowed her eyes in admiration. The Major General had balls of steel. Many times she'd seen officers whine and dissemble and make excuses when brought to task by their superiors. Dev was making no attempt to wriggle out of this. He was taking it face on. Namat Jira gazed at the Major General. Dev stood stiff and straight-backed, his eyes as glossy and black as the tight folds of the Durband that secured his spiked helm to his head. Without expression, Dev half drew his sabre with his right hand, his left hand clutching the top of the scabbard, and waited. Dev was showing he was prepared, at a simple nod from the Lord Commander, to snap his sword blade against the braced scabbard to symbolize his disgrace and discharge, forfeiting forever his rank and rights. It was a brave offer.
"Perhaps later, Major General Dev," Namat Jira said mildly.
Dev resheathed his sword. The Lord Commander stepped forwards, and the gathered officers parted to let him through. He strode down the chamber through the midst of them, heading towards the windows at the far end. His lucifers followed him, the thylacine padded with them, lean as a coursing hound, its tongue lolling from its long, rapacious jaws.
8 months, Namat Jira said as he walked. 8 months we've had to slog at this world, and still the sorcerous bastards confound us. I thought we'd finally broken the deadlock when Tel Yutan fell. I thought we were about to prize victory from their dead hands at last, but now this nonsense. It's as if we'd taken a backward step. No, a dozen backward steps. It feels like this bloody war is only just getting started, and Terra knows it's cost us enough already. It's cost us blood, it's cost us men, it's cost us time. They're barbarians. This should have been over and done inside 2 weeks.
He stopped in his tracks halfway down the chamber. The Lucifers halted smartly and stood with him, eyes front. The Thylacine pulled up sharp on the golden lead and sat. Namat Jira turned slowly, running his gaze across the gathered commanders on either side of him.
"It has been my recent privilege," he said solemnly, "to have shared communication with the First Primarch. Do any of you know where Lord Horus is just now?"
No one answered.
"I'll tell you," said Namat Jira. "Great Lupercal is fighting on a rock called Ulanor. He stands at the Emperor's side, at our most glorious Emperor's side, and together for the benefit of our future, they are making war upon the Greenskins. The bestial monsters have gathered in unprecedented numbers, and the Emperor has met their attack head-on. Can you imagine that? Ulanor may prove to be the single most important combat in the history of our new Imperium. We may in time regard Ulanor as the defining victory of the Crusade, the moment mankind confirmed his mastery of the Void, the moment our Xenos adversaries turned tail and fled forever."
Namat Jira hesitated before continuing. He was still turning slowly, watching them all, his eyes shining with passion.
"And in the thick of it, the First Primarch finds enough time to contact the Crusade commanders to check on their progress and encourage their efforts. What do I tell him? What do I tell him? Good luck with the Greenskin Horde. We're having a terrible problem with a bunch of subhuman peasants."
He let the words hang. He raised his hand and gestured towards the ceiling with outstretched fingers.
"Out there, immortal combats are being waged in the name of humanity. The stars are quaking with the Emperor's might. Yet this is the best we can do."
He started walking again and reached the window. The chamber was high up in the palace and afforded a good view out towards the city of Mon Loh. The officers and Uxors gathered in behind him. There was no doubt, even from that distance, that the city was screaming. According to Honen Mu's sources, The port city had started its eerie screaming during the early morning, 3 days previously. Within half an hour, the besieging forces had realized something momentous was afoot. Dark clouds, like the stain of vapor from a slumbering volcano, had spread above Monlo, and a wind had picked up. Oddly, despite the wind, the cloud cover in the broad sky above had slowed down, as if the planet had become retrograde on its spin. All of the astrotelepathic resources of the fleet had gone blind or suffered sudden trauma shock. Word was, a powerful psychic force had been born in Monlo, the last bastion of the Nerthine. The city had begun to emit a howling scream, a scream audible to both the regular soldiery camped outside and the minds of the fleet's wounded sensitives. The screaming, both acoustic and psychic, sounded like the anguish of the damned. The Uxors and their aides had suffered particular discomfort, but everyone had been affected. Vox links had been impaired, and many army units had been rendered nervous and undisciplined. Assuming that some calamity had stricken the city, Major General Dev had ordered an immediate attack to take advantage of the situation. The attack had stalled when significant portions of the besieging force had simply refused to advance. Other stories had surfaced. Plagues of lizards and frogs had been seen around the city's sewer outfalls, and petals of sloughed snakeskin had blown into the Imperial lines on the wind. Forward observers claimed to have seen giant things, great saurian shapes, moving around in the dust storms that had whipped up outside the city walls. Orbital scans revealed that the basin of Monlo Harbour had turned pink overnight, perhaps due to algae infection, and that the pink stain was spreading out of the harbour area into the open sea. Still, through it all, the plangent screaming had continued. Quitting the main chamber, Namet Jira retired to his private quarters. He left one of his Lucifer Blacks to announce a list of the persons he wished to meet with personally.
"Attent! Major General Nitin Dev," the Lucifer called out in his thick Iskian accent. "Colonel Sinhal Manesh, Colonel Ide Priya, Princeps Amon Jeveth, Uxor Ruxana Saeed, Uxor Honan Mu."
Honan Mu froze. "What? Do you know what this is about?" Honan Mu asked Ruxana as they walked briskly along the hall to the Lord Commander's quarters. They didn't know one another especially well, having served in different theatres during their careers. Honan was much younger and much shorter than the long-limbed Ruxana. She was also much stronger, perceptively, and rather despised Ruxana, though she didn't mean to. The older Uxor was in the last days of her command, and her sept powers were eroded. To Honan Mu, Ruxana embodied the inevitable frailty that awaited all Uxors.
"I have no idea, Mu," Ruxana replied. "This is a mess, though, isn't it?" Honan Mu replied, scampering her little feet to keep pace with Ruxana. "Oh, quite a mess indeed. I understand you had some success, though. Tell Yutan?"
Honan Mu shrugged.
"I was lucky." "Define luck, sister."
Honan Mu glanced up at Ruxana. Ruxana's strong features were almost entirely veiled by her long blonde hair.
"That is, I'm afraid, confidential," Honan replied.
They had left their respective bands of aides waiting in distant anterooms. At the end of the corridor, a stern Lucifer opened a door and let them into the Lord General's suite. Namet Jira sat on a low couch with data slates and furls of reports scattered around him. The thylacine lay at his feet, and he scrunched at its scalp and neck with his fingers, making it tilt its head back and purr. Major General Dev lurked in the background like a reprimanded schoolboy. Lucifer Blacks flanked the room. Princeps Amon Jeveth was leaving as the Uxors arrived, heading back to his Titan Legio with a fierce scowl on his face. Colonels Manesh and Priya were standing to attention as they weathered Namat Jira's abuse.
"Not good enough," Namat Jira was saying. "Not good enough, sirs. Your forces balked and refused to obey a direct order. I want to see some damn discipline."
"Yes, sir," they mumbled.
"Proper damn discipline. You hear me? You hear me? I aim to bring this compliance to a swift and brutal end, and when that end comes, I want your men in at the kill. No questions. I tell you to advance, you advance. Do not fail me the way you did Dev."
"Yes, sir."
"Get out of my sight."
The officers hurried away. The Thylacine opened its huge jaws and yawned languidly. Namat Jira studied a data slate one of the Lucifers handed to him, and then looked up.
"Uxors," he smiled, "come close."
They came forwards, side by side.
"First of all," he said, "I want to build the full picture here. Roxana, I'm told you were responsible for reconnaissance and scouting at Mon Loh."
"That was my role, sir."
"You had agents in the field?"
"I did, Lord Commander," Roxana said. "Most of them were long-range observers and spotters."
Namat Jira consulted the data slate.
"But you had at least one intelligence officer inside Mon Loh the morning this hubbub began."
He waved his hand distractedly in the direction of the window. Roxana pursed her lips and looked down.
"Yes, sir, I did. Konig Henniker."
"Henniker? Yes, I know him. He's a reliable man. What happened to him?"
"He had entered the city covertly once already, sir, and briefed me afterwards. His intelligence was of good quality. He inserted that morning very early, intending to collect data on the Kurnaul and North Wall areas. He never came back."
"Ah, I see," the Lord Commander sighed. "Thank you, Uxor Roxana."
Honan Moos stiffened. The sept link between Uxors was never that strong, especially between a fading veteran and a blossoming youngster, but Honan Moos could feel it all the same. A cloying dampness in the mind. Roxana was lying, or, if not lying, shielding some truth. She looked at Roxana. The other woman did not meet her eyes. She turned to go.
"You might as well stay, Uxor Roxana," Namat Jira told her. "You'll hear of this soon enough."
He looked at Honan Moo.
"Uxor Honan, my compliments. You, of course, know something these others do not. Tell them, because it's about to become common knowledge."
Honan Moo cleared her throat.
"Tel Yutan was taken thanks to the secret contrivance of the Astartes Alpha Legion," she said.
Major General Dev's mouth dropped open. Roxana blinked.
"That's right. The Astartes have sent forces to assist us," Namat Jira said. "Not before time. Lord Alpharius has committed units to help us break this struggle. We will meet with him tomorrow, openly."
Namat Jira rose to his feet and looked at them.
"In his messages to me, the Lord Alpharius has confided that the First Primarch personally urged the Alpha Legion to assist with this compliance. Furthermore, he has recognized that there is something about Nerth that defies conventional attack and claims to possess special techniques that will remediate the Nerthine's ghastly wizardry. Those techniques seem to work at Tel Yutan, as Uxor Honan will testify. Let's hope they work here, too."
Namat Jira looked around at Major General Dev.
"So it's all right, Dev," he smirked. "The Astartes are coming to rescue your reputation."
"I'll take care of my own reputation, thank you, sir," Dev replied.
"Good man. Well spoken. Moo, You're the only one of us who has dealt with the Legion face to face. What do you make of them?
I have found them to be highly effective, sir, Honan replied. They are Astartes, after all.
Namatjira nodded, but seemed unconvinced.
I cannot help wishing, he remarked, that it was a different legion coming to our side. One of the first, the old breed. Lord Alfarius and his warriors are comparative newcomers, with only a few decades' experience. I know, they're Astartes, and our beloved Emperor does not found a legion without full confidence in its abilities. But still...
What is it that troubles you particularly, sir? Honan asked.
Namatjira frowned.
They're not like the other legions. They don't fight like the other legions. They practice war in the most insidious way. Gilliman has said to me on more than one occasion that he finds their methods underhand and discreditable. They are sly and devious and unnecessarily opaque.
Perhaps, Dev ventured, that is why Lord Horus thought them ideally suited to this devilish war.
Namatjira nodded.
Perhaps. All I know is they were already operating here, undisclosed, before I knew anything about it. Name me one Lord Commander who would be pleased to discover other men fighting his wars for him, without invitation, consultation, or consent.
It certainly lacks respect, replied Dev, for them to have got involved without your knowledge, sir.
Respect be damned, said Namatjira. What about strategy? How can I properly orchestrate a war if I don't know what a part of my force is up to? The potential for contradiction and misunderstanding is unacceptable. It amounts to manipulation. And that's the Alpha Legion's trademark. I do not appreciate being played.
He sat back down and stared thoughtfully at his pet.
It makes me wonder about this present fiasco. I do hope it's not significant that the moment the Alpha Legion embroils itself in my affairs, things go to hell in a landspeeder.
There were preparations to be made. The Lord Commander dismissed them, and Major General Dev left the room with the two Uxors.
Dinas,
Namatjira called when the door had closed behind them. One of the Lucifer Blacks moved quickly to his side. The Blacks did not walk. They padded as silently and fluidly as cats. As if recognizing an alpha male, the Thylacine got up and moved out of the man's way.
Uxor Roxana? The Black asked.
Namatjira grinned.
You noticed it too.
Dinas Chain looked identical to the other Lucifer Blacks in the room. The brigade made no great show of rank or duty markings. Only an expert in late-strife-era regimental ephemera would have recognized the trio of embossings on his left shoulder plate that identified him as a Bajalur captain.
It was obvious in her body language, sir, Chain said. The set of her head, the position of her feet.
Hiding something.
Undoubtedly.
Namatjira nodded.
Yes, I thought that. Place her under scrutiny. These are depressing times, Dinas, when we have to watch our own shadows.
There are shadows in our shadows, sir, Chain replied, citing an old Ischian proverb. This war has become a business of counterfeit and duplicity. We manipulate and are, in turn, manipulated.
The Lord Commander shook his head sadly.
It is the latter I seek to avoid. Place her under scrutiny.
Uxor?
Roxana stopped in her tracks and looked back. The palace hallway was busy with mustering troops and servants hurrying with platters of food. A servitor was lighting the night lamps. Honan Mu stood a few steps behind Roxana, staring at her.
Was there something else, Mu?
Roxana asked.
I'm sorry you lost your agent, Mu said.
So am I.
Is everything all right?
Honan Mu asked.
What do you mean?
The tiny girl shrugged.
I don't know you, Uxor, but I am your friend. I sensed a tension in you back there.
Roxana combed her long, straight hair back behind her ears with her fingers.
We were called to attend an angry Lord Commander, Uxor. I think tension may have been inevitable.
Mu nodded.
Are you accusing me of something? Roxana asked.
Of course not. I was simply offering my support, Uxor to Uxor, if support were necessary.
It's not. But thank you.
They nodded to each other.
Tomorrow, then?
Tomorrow.
Honan Mu stood and watched Roxana walk away until she was lost in the crowd. Then she turned and went to locate her waiting aides. They rose like hungry fledglings as she entered the anteroom, snapping and yabbering all at once.
Settle,
Mu ordered.
What's happening? Nefertiti asked.
What did the Lord Commander say? Jani wanted to know.
Settle,
she repeated, snapping with her sept. They fell quiet.
Tiphaine,
Mu said. The oldest of her blonde aides looked up brightly.
Yes, Uxor? Go and find Boon for me.
Boon? Really, Uxor?
Just go and do it, girl,
Mu snapped. Tiphaine darted away, slamming the anteroom door behind her. The other aides began whispering and chattering to one another.
I will not see the Chilliad disgraced, Mu thought to herself. I simply will not permit it. If there is canker in our ranks, I will root it out before it comes to light. The Geno Chilliad, worthy old hundred, will clean its own house. I will not leave it to others to purify us of contamination.
Uxor,
Jani called.
What?
There is a hetman waiting to take audience with you. He has been waiting 3 hours.
A hetman?
Which hetman?
Mu asked.
Sonica of the Dancers,
Jani replied. Mu walked into the side room where her aides had left Sonica waiting. Rush lights flamed in the wall brackets, and myrrh had been left burning in small scoop bowls. The shutters had been lifted so that the cold and clear night air could be admitted. Through the window, Mu could see the distant outline of Mon Lo shimmering in the darkness. The dull echo of its screaming came in on the wind.
Peto,
she said. He rose to his feet from a low couch. He had been cleaned up a little, but there was no disguising the fact that he was thin and unshaven. His clothes were ragged and ill-used, and he had been given a non-issue canvas jacket to wear.
Uxor, he nodded.
She went straight over to him and hugged him, her small embrace barely encircling his upper arms.
Oh, I thought you were dead, she cried into his chest.
So did I, he admitted. She stepped back to look at him.
I was told Telkat was a massacre, a surprise attack. They said no one made it out of the Nerthine ambush.
Virtually no one did, he replied. I got lucky, with Lon and Shar and about a dozen others. I fought my way out. It was a terrible day. We were... He paused. We were almost dead, every step of the way. We fled into the hills behind the Tell and laid low in the cave pools for a day and a night. When the place went quiet, we dared to come out. The Nerthine had gone. Everyone, we found, had been butchered. So we trekked across country, made it to CR-668 and picked up a transport there. Mu sat down on one of the couches and reached out with her sept. Nefertiti came in immediately.
Food and wine, girl, right now, Mu ordered.
Nefertiti ran off to do her Uxor's bidding.
They brought me food and wine already, Honan, Sonica said, sitting down on the couch opposite her.
You're starved.
You need more, she replied.
You say Lon made it? Shar?
He nodded.
Both of them, 8 other troopers. We lost Attix, Gars, all the other Bashaws. It was a slaughter.
He wiped his good hand across his mouth. A faltering smile appeared from under it, as if by some conjuring trick.
The dancers have danced their last, I'm afraid, Uxor.
She hung her head.
At least you're alive.
At least that. He drew a breath and stared at her.
What happened about the body, Honan? He asked quietly. About the what?
The body.
She hesitated. I don't know what you mean, Peto.
He frowned at her.
Yes, you do. The thing Bronzy voxed you about from CR-345.
Voxed?
When was this?
His eyes grew narrower.
About a week ago, the day before the massacre. Bronzy spoke to you on encrypt for several minutes.
Honan Mu returned his look cautiously.
I swear on the Emperor's life, Peto, I have no idea what you're talking about. I took no call from Hurtado.
She looked at him as if he were slightly mad.
Peto Sonica felt an odd sensation, as if the world were gently swallowing him up. The last 5 days had been little short of hell, but he'd weathered everything by focusing on one thought. Bronzy's words. My ace in the hole.
Where's Bronzy? Sonica asked.
Look, said Honan Mu, there seems to have been an unfortunate lapse in the channels of communication. Why don't you start from the beginning, Peto?
There's been no lapse, Sonica thought. We spoke to you. I heard your voice on the Vox set. You were the only one who knew, and the next day Telcat was annihilated. Oh, shit. You're part of it.
The chamber door opened behind Mu.
Uxor, you sent for me?
Mu looked around. Franco Boone stepped into the room. He ambled forwards, smiling at Mu, then blinked in surprise as he recognized Sonica.
Dancer Het? God's grace have me, I thought you were dead, man.
Apparently not, Sonica said, forcing a smile onto his face.
Franco Boone? The Gene Whip? What the hell is he doing here? Unless he's part of it too?
We were just talking, Mu said. Peto was telling me how he'd survived the ambush.
I'd like to hear that myself, Boone grinned. Juicy stuff, I bet. What happened, Sonica? I heard it was bloody.
He sat down on the couch beside the Uxor, looking at Sonica eagerly.
Boone was a powerfully built man, with a nose like an axe's blade and a small tuft of black beard on his chin. He was uterine, but his abnormally high IQ, an atavistic aspect that was occasionally generated by the Chilead's genic pool, had qualified him for the special role of Gene Whip. Gene Whips were the strict regulators of the Chilead's ethos, specially empowered to maintain levels of conduct and morale, and to enforce discipline and punishment. In another age, Boone might have been called a political officer.
Peto Sonica decided it was time to shut up.
It was bloody, sir, but I've been out in the desert a long time, he said, and I fear a lack of food has addled my brain, not to mention the wine the Uxor's aides have been plying me with. Forgive me, I'm all out of sorts. I'll tell you the story some other time.
Peto, Mu said, what was that other matter? Something about Bronzy and a body?
Sonica shook his head.
I'm sorry. I think I may be slightly delirious. I keep doing that. Lon'll tell you. I keep talking about dreams as if they're real. It's the fatigue. Forgive me, Uxor. I need sleep.
He rose to his feet.
I'll find a billet and dream this off. Tomorrow you may get more sense out of me.
Peto, are you sure you're all right? She asked.
Good rest to you, Uxor, he said,
and closed the door behind him. Sonica strode away down the hall. He was perfectly wide awake. His world was unravelling from a point he didn't think it could possibly unravel from. Just for the time being, he realized, there was no one he could trust.
Would you like to explain that curious moment? Boone asked, once Sonica had gone.
Boone helped himself to a cup of wine from the tray Neferti had just brought in.
I'm not sure I can, said Honan Moo. I think Sonika was a little too tired for his own good. He was saying something about Bronzy.
Boone smiled. And a body, as I heard it?
I know. It makes no sense. The poor man, he must be so strung out.
Sonika wasn't why you summoned me, then? Boone asked, leaning back and sipping his wine.
Not at all.
So why am I here, exactly?
Mu told him of her encounter with Uxor Roxana.
She was clouding something with her sept, Mu said. Something she didn't want the Lord Commander to know. If there's treachery within the Chilead, we have to deal with it ourselves, for the sake of our regimental honour. This must not become an exterior issue.
Boone nodded.
You don't seem surprised, Franco.
Someone's been playing games with us since we arrived on this damn planet, Boone said. I've been aware of it, all the Gene Whips have. Insurgency. The enemy is trying to pick us apart from within by means of guile and subterfuge. Subterfuge is like an iceberg. All the real weight is hidden under the surface. Let me look into it. I'll find out what Uxor Roxana is hiding.
Roxana entered her quarters and bolted the door behind her. She went into the bedchamber and froze. John Grammaticus slowly lowered the las pistol he had been aiming at her.
"For terror's sake," she mumbled.
"Sorry."
"I'm going out on a limb for you here, Con."
"I know. You didn't tell anyone?"
She made a face at him.
"No."
"No one knows I'm here?"
"No."
He nodded and sat down on the end of the bed, the pistol across his lap.
"I'm sorry, Roxana," he said.
He'd been saying that a lot, ever since he'd sneaked back into her chambers 2 nights previously. The man she knew as Conig Henniker had been dirty and dishevelled and clearly distracted by an experience he didn't want to discuss. He told her briefly that things had gone wrong in Mon Lowe and that he'd had to extricate himself quickly. He hadn't been willing to add much more, except to say that his cover had been compromised, and he didn't know who he could trust besides her.
"I believe I've been quite patient, Con," she said.
He looked up at her.
"You have. You certainly have."
Roxana shrugged.
"This feels more and more like something I shouldn't be doing. Concealing you here, denying all knowledge of you. It feels like treason."
"I suppose it might."
Grammaticus knew that he was asking a lot of her, and he was uncomfortably aware that she was only his ally because of the intimacy they had shared. She was now risking her career. She was risking execution. He had never meant for her to become involved in his business. The bond between them had grown out of honest attraction. He had not courted her just to use her.
"But you're quite prepared to use her now, aren't you?" he thought to himself, and despised his own weakness.
Almost all of his instincts screamed at him to get out, to get off Nerth and fade into the background, to segue back through the fleet from one false identity to the next, the way he'd got in. But that would mean abandoning the mission, and he simply couldn't bring himself to do that, because he knew how vital it was. A chance remained. He was still ideally placed, despite the setbacks, to accomplish the goal. With time, the sort of time he might buy from a sympathetic Uxor, he could broker the contact and put the Cabal's scheme into play. It would require sacrifices. Grammaticus wanted to make certain Roxana wasn't one of them. He owed her that much. Which meant he had 3 choices. Abort and get out, use her cruelly, or bring her in on the truth.
"I can't hide you much longer, Con," she said.
"I know."
"Why don't you go to the Lord Commander?"
"I can't."
When are you going to tell me what this is about? Roxana asked. Grammaticus rose to his feet, stared at her, and carefully considered his choices.